It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share a common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Hi there. Welcome to the program. Lisa, let's just get right to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
What a big build up, and then I'm going to let him down. No Scott Connor with us today, but that's okay. I'm going to give you the fastest 50 seconds. Scott is always very helpful to comment on what's happening in the market. Scott's a dad, and Scott's helping out with one of his kids. You know that my son's been sick too, so everybody's the kids are sick. So if you got a little one, wipe that nose twice and get out the antibacterial stuff and try to all stay healthy. Anyway, so let me give you a quick rundown of the markets for Monday. You know, it's interesting. The Dow's up about 72 points to close just under that magic or kind of new benchmark floor of 13,000 points, 12,921. NASDAQ down a little bit, off almost 0.75%. And what's interesting, that has everything to do with Apple. And I've got a little bit of a report I'm going to share with you on Apple and what's going on there. Apple pulled back. I'll go in and pull the numbers when I go to break, but they're off about 3.5% for the day on Monday. And S&P's off, but pretty flat. European shares down a little bit. We'll talk about that with Spain. There's also a lot of concerns for recessions in Europe. And the 10-year treasuries, the yield, if you buy a 10-year treasury being our U.S. debt, which is about $15.5 trillion, so you could become a part of that, is just under 2%. So nothing really exciting or new there, although it's been backing off a little bit, which is interesting. And then gold is relatively flat, down about 0.5% to 1650. And oil is also about flat at 103. So what's interesting to me, one of the things that struck me when I looked at how the market did on Monday, is I looked at the Dow being up about 72 points. And so where I think we've come or we've gotten to is earlier this year, we got a little spoiled. I just have to call it like it is. We got a little spoiled because we had all of these days where the market was up 20, 30, 40, 50 points, throw in a 100-point gain. We had all that time for much of the first quarter, only a couple days. We got kind of used to that. And so now we're getting these 1% or so swings in the market, which is what we had a lot of the last couple of years. So I think we're going to see a lot more about that. We're going to see a lot more days. They're going to have these more of these swings, especially as Europe comes back onto the radar screen. And it's almost like some good news, up, we're up 1%. Some bad news, up, we're down 2%. So we're going to see more of that. And what's going to that's going to be the fire that we're dealing with. Now, what's going to put more fuel on that fire is as we hear more now about the election going into the fall. We're about 7 months away from electing the next president, either re-electing or getting a new one. And so as that unfolds and that the outlook that we start to see for that is going to have a direct impact on the market. And we've talked on previous shows about the potential with the current administration, their plans to raise taxes in January. If Mr. Obama is reelected, the stock market is probably going to have a fit. And okay, now I can't predict that 100% certainty, but I think the market could take a 20% hit or more if the president's reelected based on the tax code and taxation implications of his second term, because he's made it pretty clear that he wants to raise taxes, especially with the taxation on dividends. And boy, if we see dividends that are at 43% taxation rate, the market could definitely take a 20% or so hit. So you're going to see, as we move through into the summer and into the fall, two big things are going to weigh. One is going to be Europe, and then the other is going to be the election. Now, we'll have other issues related to what the Federal Reserve's doing. Will they do QE3? Will they not? What's inflation doing? But those things are probably going to be playing second fiddle to the election and what's happening in Europe. So as we look at what, well, I'm going to do that after the break. I'm going to talk about Apple a little bit more, but they closed down. Yeah, they closed down 4%, down back below 600 at 580.68. So much to do there. And we'll talk about why that is when we come back from our break. So stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
And I will break it down for you. In fact, you know, I was listening to that ad as it was playing, and those spots, of course, we wrote all that ourselves, and I know it's riveting to listen to till we come back, but I had a gentleman just call up and took us up on an offer to come in and just kind of review where he is, and he wants a second opinion on his investments, and that's what we do every day. So if you make that phone call to our office and you want some help, you'll be asking us to do what we do every day, which we're glad to do. All right. Now, speaking of before the break, I was talking a little bit about Apple. Apple's getting a little bit of pressure right now. There's all this with the publishers and the Department of Justice looking into whether or not there was some things going on there with the publishers. We've had some different things happen. A lot of people are saying, you know, Apple could certainly go to $1,000 a share, but it's had such a huge run that a pullback at this point would be normal. You know, sometimes it takes time for a company to kind of establish a new floor. It's as companies grow in value or any stock appreciates in value, it's normal to see a little bit of a pullback because it's normal and smart for people to reposition. Scott's talked to me, we've talked on the show about the fact that we own Apple in our portfolios. You know, when we see a stock really go on a tear, and we don't care what it is, go through the roof, then we're going to look at paring that back. Not because we think the other shoe's going to drop, but because you don't want to have too much with any one company. And this is exactly the, because let's say the Apple went to $1,000 a share, which would be fabulous, okay? But if it did, it's now obviously a much larger position in your portfolio. You say, yeah, that's a great problem. Well, but then what if something happens and it gets cut in half or gets cut substantially? You know, all I've got to do is say the word Enron. Everybody says, yeah, I know what you're talking about, David, that the market, that's the nature of investing in stocks. But, you know, we all know that Enron, they were basically cooking the books. But I know other situations where it wasn't so much cooking the books. It was just stocks got swept up in the technology boom back in the beginning of end of 1990s and going into the beginning of the 2000s. There were companies that got swept up into that, and they had no profit. That was all air, and it was all on the come. It was all about the future, and they're building these technologies, and mutual fund companies were buying these stocks left and right, and all of this was just built up, and these stocks, the values just went into the stratosphere, and then finally people started saying, well, wait a minute, let me look at what this company's actually earning. And then the values went through the roof. I saw one guy had invested in one technology company, and it just went from, he bought it for about $80,000, and it was worth over $1 million. And then it fell back down and became almost worthless. And so this is what happens with individual stocks. And Apple faces a lot of interesting competition and shifts in their business model. They have the ability to do some of their own in-house production. So they've got to decide whether they want to do that or still have some of their other relationships for production capabilities. And iPhones, the subsidies that the companies that sell the phones for Apple, that they provide. If you walk into an AT&T store, AT&T is selling you a plan, and they're helping to subsidize the cost of that Apple phone. And so there's a lot of stuff going on, new competition, things are happening. So we need to keep an eye on that, but that Apple is a great example of why you've got to have the diversification. Now, I've got to talk about Europe. Oh boy. The Eurozone, there are more and more concerns about a recession. And just to refresh, the Eurozone, our European friends, there are 17 countries that use the euro, and the overall production, they're about 20% of their economy is industrial production, and that shrank by about 2%. So they're seeing some shrinkage in their overall GDP, and so this is a big concern. And one of the other big issues is there's this big divergence that's emerging between the haves and have-nots, the larger countries, the Germanys, versus the smaller countries, or the ones that are kind of over a barrel with carrying a lot of debt, and they're trying to wiggle their way out of that. And the European Union is trying to work together to get the weaker countries to say, okay, fix yourselves. And so how do you do that? And so these countries, one of the things that's fascinating to me about how they put this European Union together was that by going to a common currency, the euro, the thought was it would give them all this political clout, it would rival the United States, all these very positive things. And that makes sense. I get that. And allow them to have all this intra-continent or intra-union business that they would do. But one of the side effects is that countries like Spain and Greece and some of these other countries that are having a very difficult time, and I've got a whole thing I want to talk about with Spain with you in just a minute, they can't do what they used to be able to do, which is to devalue their own currency. Because guess what? It's part of a common currency. It would be like if Florida said, we're having some trouble, and here in Florida, we need to devalue our currency so that we become more competitive, so that our stuff is cheaper to people that want to buy it from Canada or people that want to buy it from Texas. We can't do that in Florida because we're part of the United States, and so we use the dollar. It's the same thing some of these countries are facing in Europe, that they can't compete with some of these bigger countries the way they normally would by becoming cheaper using their currency as a tool. And we all hear about that with China and their currency and about the fact that their currency has been kept artificially low, which has made their goods cheaper. So what have we done in America? And a lot of other countries have done this too, not just us, but we buy their stuff instead of buying our stuff. I ran across the other day, my parents sent it home with my son who had been over there, this army set that I had when I was a kid. And I loved to play with it. These little toy soldiers, little green men, little green guys, not the ones from another world, but the little green ones, that little army guys. And we'd play in the yard, me and my brother. And they were really interesting how they were made. And they're really well made. They're still, obviously still around. And I'm not a kid anymore. Well, those same army toys now are flimsy and they're cheap. And so that's what's happened. cheaper is what we've wanted as consumers as a whole. And so the Chinese have given it to us in the form of having their currency suppressed so that we can buy cheaper things. But this thing in Europe is far, far from over. I'm going to take a quick break when I come back. I need to talk to you about the pain in Spain, and it's not my fair lady. It is the reality of what's going on there and how it affects all of Europe. Stay tuned.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
We're back, and let me get real quick to this thing about Spain. And boy, why is everybody freaking out about Spain? You know, Spain kind of took that was on the back burner because of the Greece was center stage. Now that Greece has somewhat been moved to the back burner, they're still on the stove, okay? They're back there sauteing. They're still back there. But moved to the front now, coming to a boil, is Spain. Why? What's going on? Wow. Wow. Spain. Boy, okay, where do I start here? Let me give you some of the key things happening with Spain. The biggest problem with Spain, I'll give you a quick rundown of some of the things happening, but the biggest problem is they're big. They're in the trillion-dollar club. They are around $1.4, $1.5 trillion in GDP. So it's a big country. Now, it's not the United States. We're about 10 times their size. But they're not Greece with only about $300 billion. So they're 4 or 5 times bigger than Greece. And everybody was worried about it. Greece. Well, they have a lot of debt. Okay. And the worry is if they have difficulties and if they have to adopt the austerity measures that Europe wants, the European Union wants, the concern, of course, is that it will be even worse and that they will have more and more trouble. Listen to these, just some of these things going on in Spain. They've got negative GDP growth. That means their whole country is shrinking in terms of the services and the goods they provide to each other and themselves, to others. Their industrial production is falling substantially. Only Greece is worse. Their banks, bad loans for their banks are up significantly. They had to go get a bunch of money from the European lending arm, over $200 billion. Their housing prices are falling significantly. The number of mortgages being granted are falling significantly. In fact, they've been more than cut in half, not by the dollar amount, but the number of mortgages. Their construction is down. Their construction employment is down. Listen to these unemployment numbers. This is amazing. They've got the worst unemployment in Europe. Everybody here talked about Greece, they're 21% overall unemployment. Spain's at 24. Wow. That's overall. Okay, now Germany's at 6. They're the golden child. Italy's at 9, France 10, Portugal 5, Ireland 5. Listen to this number for youth unemployment. That's, I guess, their working age is 16 or 18 to 25. Spain is 50%. 1 out of 2 youth, people that are 25 and under that are eligible to work, half of them do not have a job. I don't even know what to say to that. Greece is about 50, Portugal 35, Italy 32, and Germany's 8%. Now, because of all this, the yields on their bonds are going up. The yield's up to 6% for their 10-year treasuries, okay? And what that means is that for the government of Spain to borrow money, it's got to pay 6% interest. Now, by way of comparison, I started the show sharing with you that our government, the United States government, has to pay about 2%. Okay, so there you go. Now, well, you say, well, okay, they got to pay more interest. Well, when you borrow it, having to pay 6% makes it obviously a lot more difficult because then the next year, you've got to pay interest on that debt. So you've got to pay 6%. And that compounds and makes it because then you've got to pay interest out of the revenue you have. You're having to borrow from Peter to pay Paul. And it's very difficult. And their overall stock market, good grief, their stock market's off year to date over 10%. While there's only 2 other countries in the European Union, Italy and Portugal are down 2 and 5% respectively, and the rest of the countries are up between 5 and 15%. So Spain is going to be an issue. It's going to be a significant issue. So I want you to keep that in mind. Now, should you run out and say, okay, David, I'm going to sell everything I have in Spain? Well, be aware of what's happening. I don't know that we want to hit the panic button, but I would definitely check with your advisor, or if you don't have one, you might now might be a good time to make sure that you're aware and clear on your European exposure. With our portfolios, I know in talking with Scott, who manages our portfolios here at Holland Financial, for our clients, you know, depending on the portfolio and how much risk somebody it's appropriate for them to take, you know, we might be anywhere between 20-30% overseas, which does include some Europe, but we're not loading up on Spain. We're being prudent and having only a partial allocation there. So, you know, the other thing with Europe, real quick, we talked about there being a recession. Well, if Spain's debt starts to be an issue where Spain can't make its payments, well, guess who holds a lot of Spain's debt? Nope, not us. A lot of the European banks have a huge exposure to Spain's debt. So you see why the European Union is so quick to lend them money. But if Spain has a crisis, then that'll spread to Europe. And guess what? That hurts Europe overall. It hurts those economies. And guess what it does to us? Now it hurts one of our trading partners. It hurts one of the countries that we do a lot of trading with that buy our stuff. And guess who also sells stuff to Europe? China. Is everybody worried about China? Yeah, we're already concerned about China. And are they going to have a soft or hard landing? So it is a small world after all. So let's pay attention to Europe, and there are some things happening there. Take a quick break. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
That's a load of bull.
All right, welcome back. I know I've given you, if you're hanging in there, I've given you a lot of heavy stuff on Europe. Well, here's some funny stuff, okay, just to lighten our mood. The president is calling on Romney to release tax returns. President was speaking. Where was he speaking? He was being interviewed by Univision, the Spanish language network, and the anchor asked him questions about, and Obama said he had released 12 years of tax returns. That's a lot. And the anchor asked if Romney should do the same, and the president said, absolutely. So this is getting comical. You know, I don't know. Maybe everybody knows what's going on here, but I find it very amusing. So the president releases his a dozen years of tax returns. I'm sure they don't say a whole lot. And Romney's already released the last couple of years, and he's on extension for 2011. Because his return is probably complicated. Hey, my return is not as complicated as Mr. Romney's, but I file an extension every year just to make sure I've got everything done when you have a business. Well, the whole point here, of course, is the point is to keep Mr. Romney on the defense. And if he were to release a dozen years of tax returns, the media would have a field day with that. That's called a fishing expedition. And there's an old saying that he who frames a question wins. So if the president gets to say, well, let's get all those tax returns, you know that they'll be gone through with a magnifying glass, and Mr. Romney will have to respond to every single thing he's ever done. And we already know what they're going to say, okay? You don't get to $250 million in assets without making money. So those 10 or 12 years of tax returns are going to say, Mr. Romney made money. Okay, do you want somebody that's broke or you want somebody that's been successful to be in the White House? That's for you to decide, ladies and gentlemen. Now, in an unconfirmed report, the president also called for Mr. Romney to release his underwear size and his grades from his report cards from third grade. Not really. I just think this stuff's so funny and ridiculous. Okay, that's your load of bull for today. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. I will give you your 2-minute warning. Stay tuned.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
This is your 2-minute warning.
And we're back. And, well, you probably will think this is a load of bull too, but it's really not. Okay. This is an issue for a lot of people. It is the risk of living to 100 and outliving all of your assets. And I know you're going, David, I'm not going to live to 100. I've got a solution for that. If I run out of money, I've got this or that solution, which usually involves putting yourself down. Don't do that. Put a plan together instead. How about that? I know it's a stretch for some people to think that. And you know what? The thing that's most important about trying to plan ahead is to realize that everybody's situation is unique and different. And you know, there's all these statistics out there talking about how long people are living and how we're living longer and longer. And the thing that you've got to do, of course, is you consider all the different sources of your income and you try to say, how am I going to make my assets last? Now, you've got one source of income, a lot of people do in retirement, Social Security. You might have a pension. You might have other sources of income. But you've got to look at your individual situation. And also, do you have long livers? That's always a funny thing to say when I ask people, do you have long livers in your family? No, my liver is normal size. But do you have a family history of longevity? I've talked to so many people over the years, and we talk about their family history. And there's people, yeah, you know what? I'm not that concerned about living to 100, David, but my mom lived to 95. Okay, well, there you go. You know, think about the family you have and your ancestors and the folks that went before you. How long do they live? And how long might they live if they were living today with today's healthcare? And if you think about the discoveries that will be made over the next 10 to 20 years. Haven't heard a lot about the whole mapping of the human genome lately. I'm sure it's in those journals that give me a headache when I've tried to read them. But for the public, that stuff's all going on. And they're getting better and better and better at figuring out how we work. We will see in our lifetimes in nanotechnologies where they give you a shot. Those things race through your body and figure out what's going on, and they communicate with a wristwatch you wear or to let you know something that's happening, or may communicate electronically with your doctor's offices. Think about the advances that are going to occur. Now, as I said, everybody's unique. I recommend very often when I'm planning with people and talking with them about how long we need to make sure that their money's going to last, that they go to a website. There's different websites out there you can do this. One of them I found that was kind of interesting is called livingto100.com. Livingto100.com. You go there and you can actually input a lot of information that's qualitative, not just, you know, how long did your parents live or what's your current age, but it asks you a lot of questions about your own personal situation and the way you live. Do you drink a 6-pack of beer every night? Do you exercise? Do you like dessert? Do you have a history of this, that, and the other in your past or your family? And it lets you come up with, and so I did it one day for fun, and I pretended to be a petite woman who exercised and only drank a little bit and had me living to like 90 years old. If I were that female version that was petite and did that. So it's interesting, but you've got to be thinking about longevity. You've got to be thinking about the future, and you got to think today. So Lisa says we're out of time, but there will be more tomorrow. Come back. Join us.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe soul to the company store.